Yes, today we'll continue. Just a drop of a recap of last week. Small recap to get us to focus where we are. So we're in the middle, really in the heart of the story of the Chet HaEgel, of the golden calf. And in the part that we were up to, so if you have a Chumash, I mean, it's on the screen, but if you're not looking at the screen, it's in Chumash Shmos, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Yotes. So chapter 32, Pasuk Yotes, which is verse 19. Yes, so here we are, it's Pasuk Yotes, and as we were talking about, here was where Moshe Rabbeinu already descends the mountain, and he's starting to catch a glimpse of what's really happening, and we see his strong reaction. We read this Pasuk, we read last week the Pasuk of how he heard the voices, and he had a whole discussion with Yehoshua, because Moshe, who was the actual leader of the Jewish people, was very in tune with understanding the different sounds and what it meant. Yeshua was a little bit less in tune at the moment until he became a bit more trained to be the leader, but Moshe understood that this wasn't a positive sound that they were hearing. And now in Pasuk Yotes, we see how he actually is down from the mountain and actually comes into the camp and sees what the Jewish people are doing and how he reacts. So just to quickly recap Pasuk Yotes, Vayhi Kasher, Karav El Hamachne. Now, it came to pass when he drew closer to the camp where the Jewish people were. And what did he see? Vayares Ha'egel, and he saw the actual Egel, the calf, Umachayles, and the dances, and we see his reaction. Vayichar Af Moshe, and Moshe got very, very angry. And as we saw last week, Vayashleich Miyodai, and he throws from his hands the saluchos, the tablets, and what happens to them? Vayishabaraisam, and he shattered them. They didn't just break. It's interesting because it actually attributes their breaking to him. He shattered them, Tachas Ahar, at the foot of the mountain. Like I said, I'm just going to quickly recap a few. I know we've done some of these commentaries, but just quickly, and we're going to go on to the new ones today. Vayishlach miyadav. So what does it mean, vayashlech miyadav, that he threw it from his hands? So Rashi tells us why. What was going through Moshe Rabbeinu's mind when he saw what the Jewish people were doing? So he saw the terrible sin that they were committing, that they were actually doing, in his eyes, what looked like something like idol worship. So he had this train of thought, what was going through his mind. Amar, Ma Pesach, she achas min ha-mitzvahs. Pesach, which is only one of the 613 mitzvahs. And what does the Torah say? Amra Torah, kol ben nechar lo yoichal bay. The Torah says, no estranged one should eat from it. So somebody who denies Torah or denies Hashem or something, they can't even eat from the carbon Pesach, and that's only one mitzvah in the Torah. HaTorah kulakan, here I am holding the tablets, which contain within it the entire Torah. V'chol Yisrael mishumadim, and all of the Israelites here at the moment are like apostates. V'etnen alahem, shall I give it to them? So Moshe Rabbeinu felt that he cannot give the Jewish people the Torah based upon the way they were behaving. It wouldn't be honor for the Torah to be given to the people who at the moment seem to be exactly doing the opposite of what the Torah dictates. Okay, so he shatters. That's Rashi's view of why he shatters the luchos. We're going to have to analyze that a little bit more and understand how he did it and why he did it. And as we saw, as I said last week, we did see a few of these points. I'm just going to quickly run through again, just to tell you that the Chizkuni explains beautifully that it says vayashlech miyadav, that he threw it from his hands, which meant, interesting thing, it's funny, even though Moshe Rabbeinu was angry, and you would think he was almost like losing himself. That's what it seems, like he got angry, and it's almost as if he shatters, is in a fit of rage. But the Chizkuni points out, Moshe Rabbeinu was never in a fit of rage. It wasn't that he wasn't in control. And everything that he did with a purpose. He did it because that's what was meant to be done, and that would lead to the best possible outcome for everybody. How do we see it here? Because something interesting, if you notice, it says that when he threw it from his hands, and then it says that, and the Pasuk said clearly, let me just see those words, it said, Vayishaber oisam tachas ahar, and he shattered them at the foot of the mountain. So it's interesting that when he threw it, he didn't throw it that it should fall on his feet. He threw it where it fell a little bit of a distance from him. So again, it's very interesting. It was very, very exact. It wasn't like, you know, when you're very angry, when a person's very angry and not in control, then they just break things without knowing what they're doing. But here the Chizkuni says this was not the case with Moshe Rabbeinu. He just couldn't hold them anymore, and he threw them at a little bit of a distance in order so that they shouldn't actually harm his feet. They didn't do any damage to Moshe Rabbeinu's feet when they fell. But a little bit more, very interesting, this I don't think we mentioned. Why was he able to break these luchos? Why were these luchos, so to speak, breakable? You know how nowadays you get these glasses that say unbreakable? Why are these holy luchos even breakable? So the Chizkuni points out something interesting, that the luchos contain all of the aleph bays, except it is missing a letter. The first set of luchos were missing the letter tes. If you look at all of the Ten Commandments in the first set of luchos, there is no letter tes, which means it's a little bit deficient, if you want to say. It's missing one of the aleph bays. In the second set of luchos, Moshe Rabbeinu added three words when it talks about the mitzvah of kibud avim, right? Kabed zavicha ve'esimecha, right? That you should honor your parents. Then it says, leman yitav loch, in order that it be beneficial to you. And the word yitav has a tes. So in the second set of luchos, there is a tes. In the first one, there wasn't. And because it was missing one of the letters of the aleph bays, it actually was breakable, so to speak. And that's why he was able to break it, but that's why in the second set we made sure there was no letter missing. Just a small little interesting point. And we did mention this, but it's a very beautiful point that the Rabbeinu Bahai says. Moshe Rabbeinu saw, what did he see them doing? He saw the egel, and it highlights umechayles. Their dances. The truth is they were doing many, many different forms of celebration. They were using many different instruments. They were doing all kinds of different, who knows what they were doing there, maybe with fire, with I don't know what. And yet the Pasuk highlights only one thing, the word Mechayles. And he says, why? Why does he highlight that, which is the dances? So he says, because the word Mechayles, we can play on the word, and Mechayles is similar to the word Mechila, forgiveness. When Moshe Rabbeinu, at this peak of the height of his pain, right? This is really when he's just seeing them doing the sin, right? And he's at the height of his most incredible, almost disappointment. It's like a parent who sees the child doing something that they would have never expected them to do. Exactly the opposite of everything that they had taught them all, you know, the entire time. And yet they do exactly the opposite. At that point, the pain is at the thickest, at the highest. And the disappointment is at the highest. Yet, Rabbeinu Bahai points out, even at that point, Moshe Rabbeinu's love for the Jewish people was so strong that what did he see? He saw the potential of forgiveness, even in the darkest time, which is quite magnificent. From the word mechila, he saw that there is possibility for them to gain atonement. Okay, so you can see that's a true leader, and we'll develop that a little bit more soon. Moshe Rabbeinu's incredible love of the Jewish people, which is why he is really called our shepherd, our leader for all generations. Okay, then we also mentioned, just wanted to see one more thing. Yes, we mentioned that, and I just want to read you a line from the Sfarno. I know we said it, but just very quickly. What did he see? It says he saw. He had heard about it, right? Hashem had already told Moshe what the Jewish people were doing, but now he saw it. And what did he see? What was it that bothered him so much? He saw the joy. He saw the excitement. And for Moshe Rabbeinu to see that excitement, you know, sometimes we make a mistake. We do something wrong. But at the same time, we're feeling guilty while we're doing it. But here, they were so exciting. They were so excited. They were celebrating. So to Moshe Rabbeinu, that was like help. That was scary. And that's what it says. It says that that's why he got so upset, so disappointed, he almost gave up hope. And that's what it says, that maybe they won't be able, and the Sfarno's language is, v'noyash, he like almost despaired, sheyuchal l'sakein ha'meuvais, that maybe they won't be able to fix up their mistakes, but oifen sheyachzeru l'tmusam, that maybe they won't be able to return to their state of simplicity, wholesomeness, tumin, their real pure state that they were before. Maybe they can gain atonement, as we said, but who says they will be able to return to the purity that they had before? And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was worried about. As he says, and maybe they wouldn't be worthy of these luchos. And then we did mention the Al Sheikh, that even though Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly what he was going to face, because Hashem had prepared him, nevertheless, There's nothing like actually seeing it. Once he saw it, that's when he was filled with a rage, and that's when he threw down the luchai. So it's hearing news is not the same as actually seeing it. It doesn't have the same impact. Okay, that's what the Al-Sheikh explains. And I know we did the Ar HaChaim just very quickly. Vayihi, we said, is Lashon Tsar, pain. Who was in pain? So there's many different aspects of pain that is being highlighted here. First of all, the fact that now the concept of death returns, because the concept of death departed when the Jewish people received the Torah, because all impurity was taken away. When there's no impurity and there's no deficiency, there is no death. So this was the most terrible pain Moshe Rabbeinu saw. He saw the pain that the Jewish people will experience through the generations, all caused by this mistake, that they brought the impurity back upon themselves. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself felt tremendous pain and disappointment. And we also said that the Jewish people, the pain is also for the Jewish people. It's like their shame. When they see Moshe Rabbeinu and they realize what they've done, so not all of the Jews, but a large part of the Jewish people felt incredible shame now that they see Moshe come down from the mountain. So this is the Vayihi is referring to the pain of the shame that the Jewish people felt. Okay, so that was that. And then there was one more thing that I saw that was very beautiful in the Ar HaChaim that I don't think I shared last time. It says that he saw the Egel and he saw the Mechiles. Very interesting. And what happened when Moshe Rabbeinu came down and he's coming closer to this golden calf, which we imagine it to be an inanimate object, which on a certain level it was. But as we said, it did have certain powers from the spheres of impurity. But what happens? As soon as Moshe Rabbeinu's presence is there, very interesting thing, the klipa, the impurity, the negativity, recognized who's really in charge, Moshe, the Holy One, and it departed. So any power that this egel might have had because of from the impure side, so to speak, left as soon as Moshe appeared. This is what took place over here. So you can see another interesting thing also is that Moshe Rabbeinu, just before the impurity departed, Moshe Rabbeinu said to the egel, "Who made you? Who actually formed you?" And they responded that the Erev Rav formed us. Remember that multitude of people, the negative, the Egyptian converts who weren't real converts, they were the ones who made me. That's what it says, that's they spoke to Moshe, so to speak, and responded that. Okay, let me just see. Yes, okay, now another interesting thing also that the Ar HaChaim points out, that it says that he came down, and what did he see? So he sees the Egel and he sees the Mechiles. Very interesting. So the Mechiles we translate as the dances. But the Mechiles could also just mean some of the instruments that were laying around. And why? Because as soon as the people saw Moshe, they sort of hid. So he didn't even see the people. He just saw, it was almost as if he had heard the sound, but then when he comes, he closer, I guess, from a distance, he saw them, but then as he approaches closer and closer, the people retreat and they like hide themselves. And the only thing that's obvious is the actual egel, the actual calf itself, the golden calf itself. Okay, so that's what we see. Just now, there's a malbim that we didn't say last week, and I just will start over here, Kasher Karav, as Moshe Rabbeinu got close. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't break the luchais until he was very, very close? Because as we said, he could already see from a distance. First of all, Hashem had already told him. Second of all, he heard the sounds, and he could already see as he's approaching. But it seems that only when he got close did he actually shatter those luchais. So why was that the case? So the Malbim says that was because Moshe Rabbeinu was hoping, and in his mind he kept on hoping, because he's such a leader and he's such a like a father to the Jewish people, that he felt that perhaps when they see him, they will immediately say, "Oh my gosh, we've made such a terrible mistake." And they will say, "The only reason that we made this calf was because we didn't think you were coming back. It's not that we wanted an idol worship, as we mentioned. We just wanted somebody who can guide us through the desert. Now that you're back, we see, we have our guide." But when Moshe came close and he saw, and it was only a few of them, but he saw some of them still dancing, Then he thought, uh-oh, this is trouble. So there are some of them who actually are serving the Egel in whichever way and are not calmed down just by the fact that I have returned. So then he shatters the Luchais. That's what the Malbim explains. Okay. I just want to read you something very beautiful. This is from Rabbi Monk. I know we've quoted from him often, and he brings very beautifully. And it's such a powerful concept. Why is it? Because again, it's not that Moshe lost control. There's an element of obviously tremendous element of pain, of despair, of shock in Moshe Rabbeinu. It's true. But nevertheless, Moshe Rabbeinu always remains Moshe Rabbeinu, right? He's a real godly man, a real godly leader. So how could it be that he takes these tablets that God had made, right? Handmade, you know, and precious and given to him by Hashem and actually shatters them. So he explains beautifully. He says, all along, I'm just reading from his book, all along Moshe had been carrying out an arduous training program for raising these former slaves to the level of a holy people. Now, without hesitation, in an outburst of terrifying wrath, he smashed the tablets that he had just received from Hashem. And this action had a greater effect upon the souls of the people than all the sermons, miracles, and even trials that they had been exposed to up to this point. Seeing the debris of the tablets of testimony at the foot of the mountain made the people conscious of their shame and their betrayal. And we know sometimes, even with other people, or sometimes we almost have to fake an anger just to get the point across. Like, this is something terrible that you've just done. What could be like, this is like almost, this action that Moshe Rabbeinu does literally shakes up the Jewish people. And that's what he wanted. And it really did. And he realized that this was something that he had to do. He had no choice. This was like a very critical point. And even if it is such a holy thing as Hashem made, you know, God made kind of tablets, it's worth it for the education of the Jewish people. And he finishes off, he quotes from the Gemara that Shim ben Lakish, Reish Lakish says in the Gemara, it sometimes happens that an act of apparent destruction becomes an act of building a foundation. And that's sometimes the only way to do it. As we know, on a physical plane, in order to build a new house upon a space where there's an old house, you have to first demolish. Only then can you rebuild. And the same way here, he had to destroy all of their false ideas about idol worship, and only then was he able to continue and start the rebuilding process. So this was done by the act of shattering these luchais. Another very, very magnificent thing, that I think it was Emek Dover says, he says that part of the problem was that, as we said, the Jewish people were so steeped in idol worship in Egypt, right? That's what the Egyptians were. So to the people, they had this need of something material, something physical that they can put their faith in. Something that they can actually see, something tangible. For them, the concept of God, the concept of spirituality was so foreign. So when Moshe Rabbeinu saw them serving this golden calf, he felt the way to show them what truly God is by taking these tablets, which God had just given to him, but they were still now physical, and shattering them and showing them that your connection to God is not through something physical. It is much deeper and much higher. And you have to remember that God cannot be contained in tablets, in anything, so to speak, in anything physical. God is much greater, much higher than anything physical. So that's also why he shatters again, to bring home to them that this type of worship is not what they're meant to be engaged in. Another one beautiful medrash that it describes, the medrash describes something interesting. It's hard for us to understand, but it's obviously a medrash, so we have to take it out of context a little bit, that the luchais were 6 amos, you know, 6 hand breadths. That was the measurement, so to speak. And the medrash describes that Moshe Rabbeinu was holding on to 2, Hashem was holding on to 2, and in the middle there were 2, and they were sort of, it was like a tug of war almost, and they were pulling, you know, who's going to get control? And at the end, Moshe gets control, and he grabs the luchais, and then after he grabs them, and he holds them, and they're his, does he shatter them? So the Maharal says, what does this represent? What does this mean? So he says, it represents something quite magnificent, a very beautiful idea. So it says like this. He says that the truth is that there's a historical conflict between the ideal and the actual. So Hashem, it says like this, that when Hashem said the Ten Commandments on Har Sinai, Hashem had begun to reveal his being to man. What did it imply? That the possibility of having truth and holiness, which is the ideal, godliness, should reign over what we call actual, the physical, the world. That's what Hashem was showing us at Har Sinai. But very interesting, at the beginning, Moshe Rabbeinu only had the first third of the Torah. And he still remained on Har Sinai, where he had gone to, you know, to learn the whole Torah. The other third that was held by Hashem, that represented the holiest part. And that part hadn't yet, so to speak, accepted, if you want to say, that it was also going to be taken down, drawn down into this world, which means that a part of the holiness almost resisted being revealed, or at least being able to be revealed in this world. But Moshe Rabbeinu won out, and he said, I am going to take the entire Luchos, all of it, and I am going to bring it down into this world, which means that ultimately the Jewish people and the world have the capability, the potential, it takes a long time, it's taken up until today, to reveal godliness on the highest and the deepest levels, even in this low world. And this was symbolized by the fact that Moshe was actually holding, at this point in time, the entire Luchos in his hand. But then he shatters them, because at this point, the Jewish people couldn't actually get them. Later, he will bring down the second Luchos, and he will prepare them, so to speak, and elevate them so that they are able to receive the Luchos. They are able to, so to speak, if you want to say, hold on to the holiness and hopefully slowly but surely internalize and reveal it in this world. Okay, this is how the Maharal explains that Medrash, but just one fascinating thing, and I'm going to go into a very beautiful idea here. So I see something really beautiful. It says like this. The concept of Moshe Rabbeinu shattering, literally breaking these luchos, is actually a very difficult one for us to understand. As we've just mentioned, and it highlighted it in our psukim, these were made by God. They weren't just made, everything's made by God. But these were made by God in a godly way, which God gave the potential for these tablets to come down into this world as godly tablets. As we said, they were miraculous. They were inscribed, and yet you can read them from both sides equally. Usually if something is engraved, it's only on one side that you can see it here. Both sides looked correct. The middle of the letters were sort of hanging miraculously. The whole thing was miraculous. Moshe Rabbeinu takes these incredible, powerful, spiritual things, this gift that Hashem had given him, and he, in his own self, takes it and shatters it. I'm almost, how dare he? What gave him the right, so to speak? And how did Moshe, who was such a godly man, have the courage, if you want to say, to do that? And what motivated him to do that? Why did he do it? So we said, according to Rashi, why did he shatter the Luchos? Because he said, he had this logic in his mind, that he said that if the Jewish people are sinning now by worshipping idols, so to speak, I mean, obviously, I can't give them these Luchos, right? They're just not givable to them. So in honor of the Luchos, he had to keep them from the Jewish people. But for that, he didn't have to shatter them. He could have hidden them. He could have buried them, you know, like we do with Seamus. He could have just said, okay, the Jewish people don't deserve to receive them. In other words, they are too holy for the Jewish people. It's like saying, I'm not going to give a diamond to a two-year-old child because they're going to lose it, obviously, or they're going to defy. They're just going to ruin it, right? But you can bury it. You can hide it. You can do something with respectfully. But why does Moshe Rabbeinu actually shatter it? So to understand that, I just want to go into something very beautiful, because the shattering of the Luchos is mentioned a few times. It's mentioned here in our pasuk when he actually did it. It's mentioned afterwards, later now, we'll see soon in a few psukim, when Moshe Rabbeinu will go back up on the mountain and he's going to beg for forgiveness, and the story is a little bit repeated. And then I just want to read you the last pasuk in the whole entire Torah. I'm sorry you don't have it in front of you, but this is the last pasuk in the whole entire Torah in Parshas Vizayis HaBracha. The Torah over there, it's just after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. And the Torah is telling us about the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it lists in the Psukim, it tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu has done all the wonders Asher Sholcha Hashem Lasseis, that Hashem has sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Parai, and to all his servants, and to all of his land. And then it says, U'lechol hayad hachazaka, and for all the strong hand, U'lechol hamoira hagadol, and for all the great awesomeness, Asher osa Moshe, that Moshe did, le'enei kol Yisrael, before, so to speak, before the eyes of the Jewish people, right? All the great miracles that Moshe Rabbeinu did. So Rashi tells us, what does this pasuk mean? What is the praise that we are giving to Moshe? What is the strong hand? So Rashi says, the strong hand is that he received the Torah on the tablets with his hands. That's the greatness of Moshe. He was able to actually receive the tablets directly from Hashem with his own hands. What's the Moira HaGadol, the great awesomeness? That's referring to all of the miracles and the acts of might that Moshe Rabbeinu did for the Jewish people throughout the 40 years in the desert. And we know he performed many miracles and won many wars and did many tremendous things for the Jewish people throughout their time in the desert. That's the Chol HaMoira HaGadol, all the great awesomeness. What is le'enei kol Yisrael? So Rashi says, before the eyes of all the Jewish people. So Rashi says, shenisa'i libay, that his heart inspired him, lishbar haluchos le'eneihem, to break the tablets before their eyes, as it says, v'ashabrem le'eneihem, and I smash them before your eyes. V'hiskima das hakadosh baruch hu ledaitai, the mind of the Holy One, blessed be He, was in accord, it agreed with the mind of Moshe, Shenemar. How do we know that Hashem agreed? Maybe Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu did it, and maybe Hashem told him off for breaking the luchos. No, Rashi tells us, we know that Hashem agreed, because what does it say? The words are, Asher Shibarta, that you broke. And Rashi adds, what does Hashem mean, the luchos that you broke? Hashem is hinting, Yasher Koichacha Sheshibarta. You know, Yasher Koyach, we say, thank you. You know, we say, Hashem actually said to Moshe Rabbeinu, may your strength be well directed. Thank you so much. For what? For having shattered the luchos. Imagine. And that's the last word of Rashi in the entire five books of the Chumash. What word? Sheshibarta, that you have broke. Okay, so we have to understand what's going on. This is going to help us understand what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing here. So first of all, we have to understand something. In these psukim, they're praising Moshe, right? So that obviously when you praise somebody, usually you go from the lower praise to the higher praise. Like you so to speak, you ascend, you go higher and higher. So first it tells us about the great thing that Moshe Rabbeinu received, the luchos, then all the miracles that he did. And then the final thing that it mentions, which is like the big, you know, the big bang, like what's the greatest thing that Moshe Rabbeinu did? Do you know how we know that he was such a special leader, such a special man? He took the luchos and he shattered them. Okay, we got to understand, what's so great about that? How does that show the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu? That's the greatest thing. That's what we're highlighting about Moshe. And not only that, but Rashi is taking the liberty, so to speak, but Rashi is not just any commentary. We know that Rashi is the commentary. And he is putting, as his last word in the entire Chumash, a seemingly negative word, a seemingly negative activity. He is saying the brokenness, he broke, he shattered. Wouldn't you imagine that Rashi would use either a name of God to make it the Lord, the Jewish people, something beautiful to end the Torah with? What kind of an ending, what kind of a last word is this for the Torah? And how is this the greatest praise of Moshe Rabbeinu? Okay, so this is the big question that we have. And what we understand is, obviously, that this is something very tremendous about Moshe Rabbeinu, that this must be not just something tremendous that he did, but the most tremendous thing possible, and that this highlights what Moshe Rabbeinu was. The shattering of the luchos actually encapsulates who Moshe Rabbeinu was and what he is to us, so to speak, as a leader, as a person, the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. So we say an interesting thing. How does that work? And it must even be greater than receiving the luchos. The breaking is almost even greater. because you can see that the word Shibarta is the word that he uses as the last actual word. So we have to understand this. So we'll understand this by first exploring just two reasons of why he broke the Luchais. So we've already mentioned one, because he felt that the Jewish people couldn't get the Luchais because they had just sinned, right? And if they sinned with the so to speak, like idol worship, then obviously it's not honorable for these luchais to be given to the Jewish people. So in that answer, we see that that's, so to speak, highlighting the greatness of the actual luchais, and that they are unable, so to speak, to be given to the Jewish people. They are too holy for the Jewish people. But there's another reason given in a different pasuk, also when it talks about, actually when it tells Moshe Rabbeinu to form the new luchais, and it mentions the sin that the Jewish people did. And it says there's something very interesting. It says, Rashi tells us, what happened? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu shatter the luchais here? Because, and he gives an analogy, it's a very beautiful analogy. He says that there was a king, and he was going to take a very nice long trip, but before he went on his long trip, he proposed to his fiance and they got engaged. So she's the prince, whatever, now she's the queen in waiting. So they haven't gotten married yet, but he proposed. But as we understand, they signed some kind of a document, some form of agreement that she's going to marry him. The king sets, you know, sail, he goes, he's on his trip, he's away for a while. And this woman that's going to be the future king has a bunch of friends around her. And unfortunately, they're not the best influence. And she starts to get involved in things that she shouldn't. And she builds up a very bad reputation. She has, thankfully, one person who is on the right track, so to speak, who sees things the right way. And Rashi uses the word shushbina. Shushbina usually is the word that we would say in Yiddish, the unterfuhrer, the one who leads the kala under the chuppah, which means it was actually like somebody who really cared for this woman who was going to be the queen. And what did this person do when they heard that the king was returning? And they were very, very concerned because they thought that the king might put this woman to death because she had brought such shame upon herself and to the king. So what did this person do? This person took the document that they had signed beforehand and actually tore it up. And what did he have in mind? He said, when the king comes back, I'll go out to the king, I'll meet him, and I'll tell the king, do you know what? She's not even really engaged to you. So she has, there's no, so to speak, there's nothing that she's doing wrong in whatever she's acting, because she's a free woman and she can do whatever she likes. Because there's no document, right? There's nothing, so to speak, that ties her to you. Fine. So when the king comes back and the shushbin, you know, this one who, the guardian, the loving guardian of this woman approaches the king, well, the king has to agree. He's right. He's nothing holding him. So he says, okay, I'll forgive her. Let's rewrite the document. Now she's agreeing that she'll be a loyal wife, which hopefully she will be. Okay, so Rashi says, the Medrash says, and Rashi interprets, that obviously the Jewish people are like that woman, and Hashem is like the king. And at Har Sinai, when Hashem, you know, revealed himself, he got engaged to the Jewish people, and he was hoping to have the real marriage. That was when they would build the Mishkan, and Hashem would literally become one with the Jewish people. Well, that would be incredible. That would be the total unity between Hashem and the Jewish people. But comes the negative influence, and that's the Erev Rav, and they influence the Jewish people to worship idols or whatever it may be, or to do something wrong, brought shame upon them. So Moshe Rabbeinu takes these luchais, which is like that document, and he shatters them. And he says to Hashem, well, there's no document. They don't owe you anything, so to speak. There's no agreement. So now you have to forgive them. And Hashem does. So whose honor is Moshe Rabbeinu thinking of when he's shattering those luchais? The Jewish people. That's who he has in mind. He's trying very hard to protect the Jewish people from any punishment that Hashem might do to them. So you see here the two different things. So from the first reason that we gave before about the honor of the luchais, that he could have just hidden the luchais. But in order for this one to work, you actually have to break this document. Because if the document exists, even if it's hidden, that means the Jewish people are bound by it. But now that Moshe Rabbeinu shatters these luchais, the Jewish people are not bound by anything. So now Hashem could forgive the Jewish people and we can restart the relationship, hopefully mend it, and hopefully this time it will be a wholesome relationship. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu actually broke the Luchos. Now, if we analyze that, what we see is we see something absolutely beyond incredible. We see that Moshe Rabbeinu, who had just spent 40 days and 40 nights on the mountain, alone with Hashem, literally, in such a pure spiritual state, and had been given by Hashem, with Hashem's own hand, these luchos, which contained everything that he had learned, right? And they were the most precious thing to Moshe Rabbeinu. What does Moshe Rabbeinu do with that? Not only were they so precious to Moshe, but more than that, Moshe Rabbeinu realized their worth. He realized their value. To him, they were godly. They were awesome. And yet, despite all of that, what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? When he sees the Jewish people sinning, and these were the lowest of the low, and it was only an element of the Jewish people, just for the sake of being able to retain, so to speak, their connection, so that they can reconnect to Hashem, Moshe takes these precious luchos and he shatters them. What does that show? So it's unbelievable. It shows, and I just want to read you a few words from here, from inside. It shows us that Moshe Rabbeinu, who is Haroye HaNe'eman V'Ha'oyev Yisrael, he is the shepherd, the faithful shepherd, the one who loves the Jewish people. He's like literally the loyal, faithful shepherd, loving shepherd of Israel. And he saw that perhaps these luchos, if they continue to exist, can cause the destruction of some of the Jewish people. Well, to him, it wasn't even a choice. The luchos have to go, and the Jewish people, they're the ones who will continue to exist. So he destroys the Jewish people out of his love. The luchos out of his love for the Jewish people. Just want to show you, this is the greatest mila, if you want to say. This is literally the greatest compliment of Moshe Rabbeinu, if you want to say, because it says like this, like, this is ma'alosai ha'nefloa shel Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the greatest level, that he is the manig Yisrael, he's the true leader of the Jewish people. Loizu bilvad shehifkir es kol mitziusai kidei lahagein al klal Yisrael. Not only does he sort of speak, if you want to say, hifkir means like he literally was mafkir, like hefkir, he made himself totally almost gone, if you want to say, in order to protect the Jewish people, as he said himself, if you don't forgive them, erase me. We didn't read that pasuk yet, but we will get to there. Erase me from your Torah. But even more than that, he actually breaks the luchos, which are godly luchos. Even that he's willing to do. Why? Because he loves the Jewish people. That's worth it for him. That's everything for him. And that's why Rashi, we read the Rashi quickly, but he said a beautiful word. He uses a word that says, shenisa'i libay, that his heart was inspired to break the luchos. It's a funny language. It sounds like, it's very interesting, because you would think, we said he broke the luchos, it sounds like in a fit of rage. He was angry. But here we see this was no fit of rage. This was not an angry kind of an act. This was an act of love, of the purest, highest, deepest devotion to the Jewish people. That's why he uses the word, shenisa'i libay, that his heart was inspired, his heart was uplifted, which means that this came from this love that Moshe Rabbeinu had to protect the Jewish people. And I just want to read you two beautiful, powerful things. And this is really, in a sense, almost what Moshe Rabbeinu is, why he did it in front of our eyes, because this is something that we can also internalize for ourselves, and we have to, in how we look at each other, how we look at other people. So he says a very beautiful thing. He says that he did this, that what had to happen to Moshe Rabbeinu, that this word of Nasa, that his heart had to be inspired, his heart had to be lifted, his heart had to be like almost, it was like a donation he was giving. It says like this, Huskat Moshe le'inyan shel harama v'hagba'a. Beregesha believe. Moshe Rabbeinu needed a lifting, an elevating in the feelings of his heart in order that the covet of the Torah, which is so great in him, like the honor of Torah, which is so great, which is one of his greatest values, he has to go beyond that. Now he has to see the love of the Jewish people and feel that more than his love of the Torah itself. So he has to elevate his heart in his love of the Jewish people. And that's what enabled him to actually break the Luchais. And it says a very beautiful thing that it says that he had to elevate, so to speak, and bring up the love even more. V'hainu la'oirer b'libay avas Yisrael, to awaken in his heart the love of the Jewish people, g'doy l'kol kach, ad k'dei she'tachriya es yiras v'kaved ha'toyre shalai. Until that overcomes, so to speak, that is the one that tips and is higher, the love of the Jewish people becomes higher than his fear and his love of the honor of Torah, and therefore able to break the Torah in order to save the Jewish people. And what is this? This is, first of all, a praise of Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's also an incredibly powerful lesson. Why did he do it? K'dei l'ntoya b'liban shel Yisrael, to implant in the heart of the Jewish people, at Saif Kol Adayres, until the last generation, till today, Ha'inyan Shel Avas Yisrael B'Tachlus HaShleimus, the concept that we have to love another Jew in the highest way possible. How did Moshe Rabbeinu implant that in our hearts? By breaking the Luchais in front of our eyes. We all saw it. And Rashi chooses to use that word Sheshibarta as the last word in the whole Chumash, because that brings home to us. Even if it involves breaking, whatever you have to do, if it has to do with love of another Jew, you do anything, anything at all, to express that love, to show that love, and deeper than that, to make sure that that Jew can retain his connection to Hashem, his connection to you, to retain his wholesomeness, his well-being, his being alive. And that's ultimately what matters the most. That's the highest praise that Moshe Rabbeinu could have been given. And that's what we see in our pasuk. This is like the highest level that Moshe Rabbeinu could have reached. And this comes through Sheshibarta. I just want to share one more thing before we go back into the psukim and see some beautiful insights into the next few psukim. I always say, it's always such hashkacha pratis, because the truth is that we're reading these psukim because we're just learning this in order. Happens to be that today is Rish Chodesh Tammuz. And Rish Chodesh Tammuz is a very special day. It's the last day actually of the month of Sivan, but it is Rish Chodesh Tammuz. And interestingly enough, when, as we said, was Moshe Rabbeinu on the mountain? During the month of Tammuz. When does he actually break the Luchais? On the 17th day of the month of Tammuz, which is in this month that we are starting now, so in 17 days from now. That's the day that Moshe Rabbeinu actually breaks the Luchais. Interesting, the number 17 in Hebrew is the gematria, the numerical value of Toiv, good. Funny, you would think the breaking of the Luchais is such a negative thing, right? And yet, deep inside, it contains the, as we saw here, the most incredible goodness, the most incredible kindness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that shows us something for ourselves, because now we are experiencing this month of Tammuz, for many people when we embark upon this month, it almost heralds a bit of a negative side, because the 3 weeks, right, the 17th of Tammuz begins those 3 weeks, which ends with Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, which is the saddest day in the Jewish calendar. The 17th of Av of Tammuz is itself a fast day, right? That's the time, those are the 3 weeks which the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. But where do they start from? They start originally from the Moshe Rabbeinu breaking the Luchais. That's what gives room for any negativity that happens later on. Well, the sin of the golden calf gives that room. Then Moshe broke the Luchais as a result of the sin of the golden calf. But we have to learn such a powerful lesson. Two beautiful things. First of all, another interesting story that's happening during this time of our year was also this that we read in this week's parasha. The last week's parasha was the story with the Meraglim, with the spies, when they sent the spies in before they were going to enter the land of Israel. And the spies come and they give a bad report, right? Well, they give a good report, but they instill fear in the Jewish people, and they say, we will not be able to conquer the land. When did that happen? So we know that the spies, when did they come back? On the 9th of Av. So they were in Israel. When were they doing the spying? Throughout the month of Tammuz. This is the month that they were there. So we find a very interesting thing, that in Torah we have a concept that Torah is so careful not to speak negatively, even about, we say, an impure animal, so to speak. Torah will use extra words just not to use the word impure. It will say something is not pure rather than impure, so to speak. Loi tahar instead of tmeya. Why? Because Torah uses very clean language, meaning to say that it's interesting, something we should be very sensitive, as much as we could, to speak positively, not to be directly negative, not to be directly harsh. And yet we find, both in our story, here we're seeing it, such detail about the sin of the Jewish people, which sounds so negative, and it's quite embarrassing for the Jewish people. And here in our pasuk we see what Moshe Rabbeinu had to do in order to protect the Jewish people. He had to even go shadow the luchais. Why does the Torah go into such detail about all the mistakes that the Jewish people made? Why can't it just tell us, perhaps in short, an abbreviated form, they did a golden calf, Moshe Rabbeinu came down, broke the luchais, Hashem forgave them, and boom, 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 and get the next luchais. Why all the details, the dancing, and the way they made it, and how they approached Aaron, every detail of the story, such a negative story. And we are told so many times that if we see somebody else do something bad, we shouldn't speak badly, right? We should control ourselves. And here it seems that the Torah is going into such length, such detail about the story. What's the point? Obviously, it is because from every single detail of this story, we learn how yes to behave, or even more than that, how not to behave. And because of that, it's worth it for the Torah to tell us, even though it seems negative. Because if it's something constructive, then it's valuable. Which means, and what's the point, there's something very powerful. That in life, a lot of times, things don't go the way we want them to, both, you know, things happen. Sometimes we get ourselves into a sort of a bad spiral, and we start to do things that we know are destructive. Perhaps we do things that are harming ourselves or harming another person. And we get into this, if you want to say, this cycle, and we feel almost sometimes what we do is we say, it's too late. I've done this so many times. This is me, or this is the way I behave. I can't change now. That's what a person says to themselves. It's too hard, I don't know how, whatever it is. So there's a few very incredible, powerful lessons. First of all, why the Torah goes through all the detail? Because the Torah wants to tell us that at any point of the story, the Jewish people could have stopped. They could have. They could have stopped. They could have changed direction. But they chose to go further. They chose to go further. At every point in the story, they were making a choice. We want to do this. We want to do that. It wasn't that one thing came necessarily out of the other. It was constantly a choice. And we too have that choice. Even if we have chosen wrong in the past, today we can choose correctly. This moment, even if 5 seconds ago we chose wrong. This is such a powerful lesson. And you can see it from very interesting, as I mentioned before, when the spies went into the land of Israel, and then they come back and they say, we're not going to be able to conquer it. So one of the motivations, why, what made them feel that they won't be able to conquer it, even after all the miracles that they experienced, right? Why didn't they believe that Hashem would make another miracle for them? So one of the things that's explained is that they had an interesting logic, which the truth is we also use, unfortunately. They said like this, Hashem, he can do miracles. I know that. Of course he can. It's not that they didn't trust Hashem could do miracles. But the problem was, they said, we don't deserve the miracles. Hashem can do miracles, but doesn't mean he's going to do a miracle for me, because I don't deserve it. Why? Because they said, look, we just served the golden calf. We are such bad people, so to speak. Therefore, perhaps we don't deserve the miracles. And if we don't deserve the miracles, well then, we're not going to be able to enter the land. And then because they were filled with such anxiety, they filled the entire Jewish people with, that's how they unfortunately inspired in the wrong way the Jewish people also with such anxiety. And again, the lesson to us, even if we have made, even if it's terrible mistakes, the worst mistakes, we can still catch ourselves, and we shouldn't allow ourselves to think that yes, we've done such and such and they weren't the right thing to do. Maybe we hurt somebody, maybe we did something wrong with one of the mitzvahs we were supposed to do, whatever it may be. It doesn't mean that we have to repeat that. No, we never have to repeat it. And Hashem doesn't give up on us. We shouldn't give up on ourselves because Hashem never gives up on us. That's a very, very important, powerful lesson. That's what we are learning. That's this month that we are in now. That's what we're meant to internalize. And that's why the month of Tammuz, although in a sense, it's quite a if you want to say, a harsh month. It's a dark month that it brings all these, you know, difficult, challenging things. But we know that the Navi Zechariah says it beautifully. The Prophet Zechariah tells us that this month is the month which we will transform to the greatest Yantif. Shiva Ser B'Tammuz, and especially Tisha B'Av, will become greater than any Yom Tov we have up until now. Because it's really the time of transformation. The transformation from the darkest to the greatest heights. And this is shown to us by Moshe Rabbeinu when he takes those luchos and he shatters them. His heart is inspired, it's lifted, because what he is saying is, I am shattering these luchos in front of your eyes, but you know what you're going to get? You're going to get a new set of luchos. And those will be even greater than these. As we said before, they have every letter in the Aleph Beis. They're complete. They contain both the written Torah and the oral Torah, and the secrets of the everything. They are even greater. Because when you transform, you reach an even greater level. And this is the very powerful and important lesson that we must literally think about. We must remember every moment of every day, never to allow ourselves just to become part of that negative spiral and just to work in automatic and think, well, it's too late, we're stuck, and that's the way we're going to continue. So that's what's very, very, very important. Okay, and sorry, just a quick, I know I'm diverting a little bit, I hope you don't mind, just we're going to come back to the Pesukim, but just a very quick point, again, Ashkacha Pratis, so today is Rish Chedesh Tammuz, which means that this week is a very special day in the calendar for us. It's Gimel Tammuz, which is the Yahrzeit of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and as we saw here that Moshe Rabbeinu, being the incredible Roye Neman, the loyal, faithful shepherd of the Jewish people, so too we have been so inspired and so fortunate to have as our leader in our generation such a special man as the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who inspired us with this message constantly. And he continues to inspire us with his teachings, and that's what we're meant to literally absorb, that every single Jew is precious, that we are precious in the eyes of Hashem, never to allow the negativity to overshadow that positive light, that love of Hashem, and that love that we have for each other. So it's something that we really, really have to internalize constantly, constantly. Okay, so very quickly, we'll read one more pasuk before the time is up, because I know we've spent a lot of time on this pasuk. Let's see, it's here in front of you. And I feel bad, I'm sorry, next week we will move on to more of the story, but just couldn't leave this. So it says, Pasuk Chof, Vayikach es ha'egel, again, this is Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chof, Vayikach es ha'egel asher osu, they took the calf, sorry, then he took, Moshe Rabbeinu took the calf that they had made, Vayisraif, what did he do with it? He burned it, ba'esh, in fire, Vayitchan, ad asher dok, he ground it until it was a fine powder, vayizer al pnei hamoyim, and he scattered it on the surface of the water, vayashk es pnei Yisrael, and he gave it to the Jewish people to drink. So, interesting, in front of the Jewish people, he was able to take that golden calf, and nobody stopped him, and he burned it, and he ground it, and then that powder became something that the Jewish people drank. Just before we go into the Rashi, we see something very powerful here, that obviously for most of the Jewish people, they didn't think it was an idol. Because if they thought this was truly a god, they would not have allowed Moshe Rabbeinu to burn it. They would have stoned him. He's only one man. They're a whole nation, right? So obviously, first of all, most of them didn't think anything of it. But even the few that, and a few that did think something, they just thought perhaps it was a replacement of Moshe, as we saw before. But they didn't actually think it was a god. It was only a minority of a minority of a minority that actually thought this had some godly power. And that's why Moshe, in front of them, was able to take it and burn it. So we can see already here, and I just want to show you what Rashi says. Why does he do this and make them drink this water that has this powder, so to speak, this part of this egel? So this is an interesting thing. This kavein levatkan kesaites. He intended to test them like women suspected of adultery. You know, we have this concept, we've read it recently in Chumash, about this woman who is suspected by her husband. She's called Anisha Saita. And part of the process by which we can prove that she's either innocent or guilty is that she has to drink this special water where Hashem's name is erased into that water. And here it's a very similar thing because they are also committing adultery, so to speak, adultery against God, taking on another, so to speak, taking on another God, which is like taking on another man, you know what I'm saying, being unfaithful. And here Moshe Rabbeinu, what does he do? He makes them drink this. So he says, Shalosh, Rashi describes to us really, Shalosh Misais Nidonu Sham. So there are three forms of death, and we're going to see this as the story unfolds, that they were, so to speak, penalties, if you want to say, that they were prescribed. Im Yesh Eidim V'Hasra, if there are witnesses and a warning, then Besayif, then you're killed by the sword. Kimishbat anshe ir hanidachas shehein merubin. Like this is the law of a city which is called an ir hanidachas, which is an entire city who serves idols, and they, like the majority, and they are killed by the sword. Eidim belay hasra, if you have witnesses and do not have, sorry, if you have witnesses, yes, and you do not have a warning, bimageifa, then you die in a plague. Shenemar vayigav Hashem esa'am, that Hashem killed them in a plague. Loi eidim v'loi hasra, if there's no witnesses and no warning, then there's a different form, as we say, bahadrukan, that's what we said over here. They call it over here a dropsy, which meant a disintended stomach. And that's like, as we say, Shabbat kum b'hamayim, that the water tested them, v'tzavu b'tneim, and their stomachs swelled up. That's like the Isha Saita. So, and we're going to see that actually all of these three different forms happen to different people. Some people had this stomach disintending, some people were killed with a plague, and some people were actually killed with the sword. Those were the people who actually really sinned openly with a witness and with warning. Okay, so that's this pasuk. I feel that time is really up. And next week in Mirat Hashem, we will explore the pasuk in more detail and see what Moshe Rabbeinu did, and explore more of the pasuk, and we'll see how Moshe Rabbeinu will confront Aaron and ask him how did he do what he did. So it's going to be a bit of a, yes, it's quite emotional in a sense, and difficult for Aaron because he did play a role, and we have to understand his role. But we'll see that in Mirat Hashem next week. So in the meantime, have a very, very, very good week. Chodesh Tov, and I will.